5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with its teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round the corner, could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the way to dare. Five will get you 10, old Mackies back in town. Now you hear about Louis Miller, he disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie, he spends just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? And old Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, babe, now that Maggie's back in town. Ah, said Jenny Diver, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Lynn, and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe, not that Maggie's back in town. Look out, old Maggie's back.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is, I'm guessing it's Thursday. It's Panic Room, it must be Thursday. And it's June. Can you believe it? It's June, 10th of June, third of the way through June, and it'll be Christmas soon. So I'd like to be the first to wish everyone a merry, merry Christmas. We'll probably start playing Christmas songs next week if Xtina has her way. So something to look forward to there. And speaking of whom... Dina, yeehaw, yeehaw indeed. How are you this evening?
Oh, I told you earlier, I'm just scattered, and this is how scattered I am. I have my little Skype screen pulled up, and it has two screens. It has the one that I hit the mute button on and stuff, and I went to move it, and then I couldn't find it. So the music is starting to wind down. I'm like, oh, my God, I have to find it. And I was panicking. I did find it, though, so yay. But that's how scattered I am. I can't even find my stupid mute button. So, yeah, it's going to be
fun.
I think it does happen.
But I'm excited this week. I have a new guilty secret, would you believe? I just finished binge-watching Hoarders on Hulu. And it sort of took me a while to realize that it's funny, actually, watching that sort of inspired me to sort of get rid of some crap out of my garage, which is kind of funny. I enjoy Naked and Afraid, and I really like that sort of what would you call it, sociological sort of documentaries. Uh-huh. I like, it's like with Naked and Afraid, you know, I mean, it's, of course, they blur out all the bums and willies and whatnot. It's about the dynamic of the people, and I love that. And I love the ones where the couple don't get on. You know, I mean, for anybody who's not seen the premises, they drop a man and a woman, they're survivalists. They drop them in the middle of the wilderness somewhere, naked with, you know, sort of a fire starter and a pot and a machete, and they've got to fend for themselves for 21 days, so, which is great. You know, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But again, just seeing how the dynamic between the people work. Same with Hoarders. Hoarders, it says at the beginning of the show, it's a mental illness. So the whole show is a showcase of mental illness, which I think is entertaining. They should do one about, you know, sort of just general mental illness. That'd be fantastic. You know, just an hour documentary set in a mental asylum. I would sit and watch that, you know, but...
I think I would too, yeah.
My latest is Married at First Sight. And I don't know if you've seen this. I was just looking through, and again, because it suggests because you're a sad bastard who watch Hoarders and Naked and Afraid, you're going to like this, you sick bastard. So, the premise is that they throughout a season, they get three couples, and they're sort of matched by these panel of experts, yeah? And they meet at the altar, literally at the altar. And they marry them. They legally marry them. And then they have a honeymoon, and then they have to married life and everything. And it is fascinating. Absolutely. I'm just absolutely hooked, you know. And it's like, and it's fun. They got this one girl in the couple, and she's obviously been around the block a few times, you know. And she's sort of... this plump girl with a three-cock mouth. And she's saying, oh, of course, it'll be strange waking up with a stranger. Yeah, come on. You're fooling no one, love, to be honest. You know, it's not your first rodeo, is it? Waking up a stranger.
This.
You should, honestly. Right. But I'm watching, I've sort of plunged into it, season four. And it's great. You know, one couple didn't last beyond the honeymoon. They actually fell out of the honeymoon. And then there's this other socially inadequate guy with this gorgeous Cuban girl. And she's desperate. Desperate for him to shag it. I mean, she's just literally, and he's just like, he's just so introverted and so non-communicative that she's getting so dead. And then there's this other couple who are all loved up, but yeah, nobody cares. I'm done, blah, blah, blah. You know, but it is just seeing the dynamic, seeing how it grows, seeing the thrust into this odd situation of you know, literally meeting their spouse at the altar. And it is it really is compulsive. Yeah, I'm going to finish season four, I think, but probably tomorrow or the weekend. I'm going to get straight back to season one and just binge watch all of it. But
you know, I was The Real World, the first, when it first premiered, the, you know, in New York, The Real World, I was in love. I loved that show. So the first couple of seasons, I totally, I was there. It got kind of weird, I think, but the first couple of seasons were great. I still own the first season of The Real World, and you know, from time to time, I'm like,
I've not heard the real world.
It's It was called The Real World, and
Real World.
It was the big MTV thing. They started it. 1995-ish or something. They take seven strangers picked to live in a loft and have their lives taped in front of a, you know, whatever. That was pretty good, by the way. If anybody out there knows The Real World, that was pretty good. They filmed everything. It had cameras all around this house, and they picked seven people just to live in a house. And I'm telling you, you got to look that up, because the first season was really good, and
Big Brother. I mean, I remember the first season of that. Actually, I was a girl I was dating at the time, and she was crazy about it. So I thought, I'll watch a bit. And it's literally this bunch of fucking nobodies living in a house, and it's like, well,
yeah.
I live in a house, and it's boring.
I caught a bit, I would catch it every now and then, but again
it's back to that, the dynamic between the people, that's what makes it fascinating. Mm-hmm. And the problem with Big Brother is that they do with like Love Island and all this sort of stuff now, they put them together in the hope that they shag, and then when they do, it's oh, shock horror, they did it on television, you know. Well, that's why you did that, you just seriously stop playing naive. Yeah, it's like, I mean, Love Island, they get all these impossibly handsome young men and stunning girls in bikinis, and they da 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 da. And, oh, shock, horror, they got together in the pool. Of course they fucking did. You know, I mean, what do you think was going to happen? What they need to do, literally, is get hold, just drag a dozen, you know, fat, pasty-faced, orange-haired men from their mother's basements, and a bunch of ugly, you know, mingers, and put them on an island together. Then you're going to get some time. I mean, to be fair, probably, you know, half of the women would just disappear, you know, but it would make, you know, because obviously, you know, that would make great TV. The social inadequates, you know, and they're just seeing that. There's a great, it's an Australian series, I think it's only like four shows, called Dating on the Spectrum. If you can find it, watch it.
Wow.
And it is people, young people on the autism spectrum. And they're dating.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it is so entertaining, because they are so bluntly honest with each other. You know, and, you know, one young man's there, and he's on his first date. They said, you know, of course, you say, well, you know, what is it you're looking for in this? And, well, I'm looking for, you know, friendship and companionship and sexual intercourse and da da da. And it's like just so wonderfully refreshing. You know, the things that you would like to say on a date, you know? Like, you know, okay, look, I've bought you dinner. Are we going to have sex? If not, we're going Dutch, darling, to be honest. Because, you know, equality.
Oh, I would watch
equality.
That.
I'm a big
bully. Right.
You know, you women want equality. Pay your own fucking way. Pay for your own dinner once in a while. Wouldn't hurt you, be honest. Wouldn't hurt.
I agree. I saw an argument on Facebook today in one of the groups I was in, and it was exactly that. They were all mad because some guy, you know, invited this girl out on a date, and then at the end of the date, he expected, you know, them to split the check. And people were, like, going nuts over this. And I'm like, it's true. You know, women are like, we want to be treated equal, and we want, well, that's equal then. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think it should be back to the whole, you know, chivalry and the guys open the door. I didn't fight for rights, you know. I know,
well, that's the
awful
thing.
But,
I mean,
I'm more old-fashioned, you know, guys and
you want
the
to,
men. And,
you cannot have it both ways. You can't, you know.
I don't want it both ways.
If, you know, I said I was raised, oh, the man always pays for shit. Well, why?
Yeah.
You know, well, at least, I mean, if you want equality, then, yeah, chip in, love. Be honest.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with that. It was pretty fun watching all the arguments, though. Sometimes I do. I get sucked into the arguments on Facebook.
It's
not
easy.
Good for me.
Yes. Yeah.
I can. Yeah. Yeah. I can. It can eat up a whole you know, portion of my day.
Although
and
I have to say, if I spot something and it just catches me, like say a bit of a bored moment or whatever, or you know, that part of my brain sort of needs a bit of stimulus, you know, I'll chip in. And usually when I chip in, all hell lets loose. Because I just seem to know, I know which buttons to press with these people. And one comment, I mean, remember that post I did a few weeks ago, and it blew up, and it was brilliant, and I was sat watching it. You know, I just sort of like lit the blue touch paper, literally stood well back, and just watched it all blow up. It was fantastic. Absolutely.
You did another one. You did another one recently where I was waiting for it to blow up, and it didn't. It was such a bummer.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
Nobody's... Yeah.
I was even contemplating unblocking some of the people I blocked because they got nasty with some of my previous ones, just so they could join in. You know, so just unblock them and say, "Hey, you've got to see this. If you thought my last post was offensive, you've got to see this one. This is going to absolutely boil your piss." You know, but I can't remember what it was now, but I was very surprised that it didn't go crazy. No, I was disappointed. I'll brush it off again at some point, you know?
Right. You need to go bigger. Go big or go home, you know? I don't know what was wrong with the people. Maybe it was just an off week. Nobody saw your stuff. I don't know. I think you should definitely try again.
I think I will. I think I'm going to have to. So, anywho, I'm assuming, banter aside, I'm assuming we do have some sort of show going on this evening. Unless I'm wrong, we'll just sit and chat. I'm happy with that. I'm fine.
This is my
social life. This is it. You know,
we
so,
do look forward to Thursday.
It's sad, isn't it? This is it. This is what we have. This is what we have to look forward to in our lives. Mm.
You know, I do love it when we have a guest come on the show that's been on before. It's so much fun to catch up with people. But it's also amazing when we have two, you know, authors that we've never talked to before. They're brand new, and I'm very excited about that. So, you know, tonight we have dark fiction writer Shane Hawk, and then a little bit later in the show we'll have splatterpunk author Daniel Volpe. So,
I do enjoy splatterpunk, so... I think without further ado, we should bring on our first. I'll let you do it. You can do the honors.
Alrighty. Our first guest tonight is dark fiction writer Shane Hawk.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you, Shane?
Good. Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. To be fair, we were both a bit miserable. It happens most weeks. A bit miserable before the show. We always have a bit of a warm up for 15 minutes. We have a good old moan and a good old moan, and then as soon as we're on the air, we're all happy. You know, so it's lifts the spirits a bit. How about yourself? How are you getting along?
Oh, I'm good. I agree with you guys. I think my fiance should go make me a sandwich.
You should post that on Facebook.
Damn right. Here's one for you. Right, okay. How many women does it take to open a bottle of beer?
Not many.
None, because it should be open when she brings it to you.
Ooh, good one.
There you go.
Edgy.
There you go. You can tell. I've been divorced twice. No idea why. Don't get it.
Oh, goodness. No. You know, and then to even make it worse, I guess, of a day today, it rained pretty much all day long. It just looked miserable. And, you know, there were times I was like, wow, what is that noise? And then I look out the window and it's like pouring down. And, you know, that always, I think, makes, you know, and weren't we supposed to have some kind of eclipse thing? Wasn't that today? Did anybody see that?
I think it was yesterday. I saw some pictures. You missed it. Yeah, I saw pictures yesterday. So.
It rained here yesterday too. I know. I swear it said the 10th, but whatever. I missed it no matter what anyway. But I think it rained both days, so I wouldn't have seen that anyway. But I was looking forward to it. I thought it had been really cool, but nothing. Nothing. I didn't see anything. So.
Yeah, I don't know what rain is. I live in California.
Oh, right.
I was just going to ask.
I'll tell you what, mate, we can send you some over. We've had a lot here this past couple of weeks. Hell of a lot. Yeah. All right.
I'll take some.
Mm. Yeah, we have to. Every single day I want to send my son out to go mow, and then it's raining.
I have that. It took me, as I say, weekend, I'm going to cut the back lawn, and then it rained. Then it was nice, and of course my lawnmower that hadn't been out since sort of October last year was dead, so I had to get that fixed. Honestly, we were losing the dogs in the backyard. The grass was that long.
Yes.
It was about a foot high by the time I got around, so it was terrible.
Backyard is getting like that too, with getting a cut. Well, you got a big dog. You can't be that. You can't lose that one out there. But
That's how tall the grass was getting. We were losing the pit bull. Seriously. So when I thought, where's the pit bull? Oh, did you see the grass moving? Oh, she's there. She's better.
Oh. Yeah, that's pretty bad. So you said California, Shane. Is it like sunny all the time there? I mean, you know, you got the show. It's always sunny in California. So that's the picture in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you tired of it?
It's always about 70 to 80. Yeah. When you want to talk about weather, you don't really talk about California. There's nothing to really say.
Yeah, sunny.
Yeah. Yeah, what's new? It's sunny. I always talk about Florida when we get talking about weather, because I lived in Florida for many years, and the sun is trying to kill you in Florida. So I do not recommend it at all. I would never go back there. It was really bad. So, but I've never been to California. So, but you say it's sunny all the time, and you know, I have this pasty skin. I rode the other day with the top down, I swear, for 15 minutes, and I got a nice burn, and now I'm peeling really great, and I'm going to peel and be the same pasty white as I was before that. So the sun and me do well together. Yeah,
well
right.
Well, that was the thing when I was in the market. Sorry, say again.
What was that?
I said that the best part of sunburns is when you start peeling, and then you peel it too hard, and then your muscle starts to show, and then you just keep going.
Oh.
And then you just tear off the entire arm.
It's not that bad. It's just a little one. I think I just have a layer or something peeling.
That would be a good advert for for Factor 70, yeah, definitely. But it was funny because when I was in the market for a new car, I was getting all these ads for soft top Mustangs, and I almost got one. And then I thought, hang on, mate, I live in Houston. I would have the top down probably twice in the year for 3 minutes, and I would die. It would kill, because like you said, I was out and about today, and it was 101 degrees out. I mean, you can't,
oh,
you know, that's, you've got all the windows up, you've got the AC on full blast, you know, and you've got your tinted windows, and no, it's just too brutal. Either that, I mean, of course, if it's not blazing sun this time of year, it's thunderstorming, so it's not really soft top kind of environment, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can definitely say that it's great here in Tennessee. I mean, I still complain all the time. I get up and I check the weather, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's going up to fucking 82. To me, that's crazy hot. I bring back the winter. I'm ready. I'm ready already. We're not even in summer yet, are we? I don't think summer even starts until – when does it start? When is summer?
It starts in March. It was in the 90s in March, so, you know, there's that.
Oh, my God. No, I hate it. I forget where we went, but it was so hot, and I think it was humid, too, that day. But the top was down, and I was mad because I'm sitting in the car, and I'm sweating. And there's just no good reason for that. There's no good reason for that. So it makes me mad. And it's cute because the boyfriend gets mad when he's cold. And, you know, I get mad when I'm too hot, so I don't know how. We just have to stay indoors all the time where we can regulate the temperature and never
get
too hot or too cold. So, Shane, you are here to talk to us about your book, Anoka. Did I say that right?
No, it's pronounced Anoka.
Well, I was close. Anoka, there we go. So tell us a little bit about it.
It's a book of horror stories. It's got six in there. It basically all takes place in a small city called Anoka in Minnesota. That's in the northern Midwest of the U.S. And I blended indigenous folklore and identity issues and grief and addiction into these supernatural elements, and I made stories that people seem to tell me that they like.
Interesting. Are all the stories kind of intertwined, or do they kind of go together, or are they all totally separate?
Yeah, there's a lot of elements that that kind of connect them. I talked about it on a different podcast, but I actually lost five stories with the hard drive crash. And so Anoka was going to be twice as long with 11 stories. And a lot of the connecting parts are going to be more fleshed out. But, oh, well, you know, technology happens.
Oh, that's terrible.
I just had to let it go.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, I've learned the hard way to save and back up everything. You know, that my computer techie boyfriend's always reminding me, did you save that on blah, blah, blah? I'm like, did I do what? That doesn't even sound like English sometimes when he speaks, but I didn't, so.
I know, sometimes he messaged me with something. I'm selling such and such. Are you interested? Yeah, great, wow. What is it? It looks great. I want it. I really, really want it. And I said, what would I use it for? And he told me, and I said, I still don't know what it is. I think we've all been through it. I'm paranoid. I mean, my computer, it backs up to a hard drive, and it backs up to Dropbox automatically. So everything, if everything failed, if everything burned down, everything's on Dropbox, nice and safe. So,
that's what I do now.
It's devastating. Mm-hmm. So when you lose a story, it's just, it's terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. So you have my sympathy, sir.
I actually gave up computers. I'm actually calling you from a payphone. And so how I draft now is I use a pen and some McDonald's napkins, just like the UK rolling way.
It's probably
and
safer.
I'm on my way to make millions. I just don't want to turn into a transphobe. That's all.
You know, the bad thing is you know, being a creative type, I love notebooks. I want to buy them every single time we go to any store. I see a cool notebook, and I want it so bad. And I sometimes give in, and I buy it, and I don't even know why. I have several that have nothing in them, but they're pretty, and I need more. And I don't even know why, because I don't write things down. I mean, James can attest to this. I don't write things down.
Yeah, I don't know what you do with all these notebooks. Sure as hell don't write shit down, do you? No, you do not.
Well, see, sometimes I do, but then I forget where I've written it down at. So
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, a problem in itself.
Oh, dear Lord.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's just I don't know. I think that because we like to write, we're drawn to things that help us write. You know, that's all I have. I should keep something by my bed. I've gotten up so many times in the middle of the night with an idea in my head that I swear to myself, I'm not going to forget this. This is too vivid. I'm not going to remember. I'm not going to forget it. And then I wake up and I have no clue what it was. And then I'm mad because I was so sure I was going to remember it, but it's
mm-hmm.
gone. I know. So Shane, I want to hear more about Anoka. Yeah, I'm going to say it wrong every time. And now that I have it in my head wrong, I'm just every time. So, but yeah, I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
I have an excerpt from my short story called Orange. And it's not the full story, and even though I've only cut about 700 words out of it, and it's still a flash fiction, so the full thing is about 1,500. But, yeah, I guess I could read it right now.
All right, go for it. It's all yours.
Just jump into it instead of having a little trailer or something. All right.
If you need to set it up or anything, you can go for it. You can, you know, tell us about it before you start or something, but if not, just jump right in.
All right, I'll just jump right in. All right. Her voice. It still bounces between my ears before my head hits the paper-thin pillow. The sound of her voice comforts me as I close my eyes, but it's never enough to cure the insomnia. It was never enough when she was really here, either, but she still loved me, regardless. Loved me with my tired eyes that watched too many black skies fade to blue without a wink of sleep. Her voice tells me everything is going to be okay, that it wasn't my fault. Tells me I shouldn't look so grim on our anniversary. Some nights it feels like she's actually here with me, but I'm afraid to share that with Devin next time he visits. Tried to get something, anything, done today. Read the same ratty paperback? No. Do push-ups on the same cold floor? Bed as quicksand, or one of them finger traps. Try to pull myself out and I'll just get more stuck. No use. Better off watching the light play on the wall. What would she think if she saw me like this? The question repeats, rattles off every corner of my skull relentlessly. I sink further into the finger trap. Before I got here, I searched for answers at the bottom of brown bottles. Aren't lucky folks supposed to discover messages in bottles? Never lucky, though. They banned me from Boudreaux's pub for some time, branding me a troublemaker. Can't help it. Forever thirsty and angry. Couldn't help bloodying my knuckles either. Bill called me a stupid red man one too many times. Can you blame me for going Geronimo on him? Those teeth I knocked out? Those teeth that gave me this here dimple below my wedding ring tattoo, I kept those teeth, root and all. One could consider me a collector. Bill didn't mind. He was sleeping in his own blood that night, his face painted pink and purple. After that, I started collecting more and more. Polished some clean, but kept most grubby and stained dark red. Loved the smell of pennies. Strung some teeth together for a necklace, too. I hung it on the elk horns in my living room for when I used to hunt animals. It was all right. They deserved it. I earned those teeth. It's a new day.
Yeah.
Could force my eyes closed, but I'd only see a lukewarm red, the fluorescence soaking through. Gray, shades of it, and black. All I've seen last night, and none of it from the back of my eyelids. Green. I want to feel it in my pocket again. Been so long since I held a good paying job. The only money in my name is from the tribe, oil and casino profits. But I'll make sure Devin gets those checks instead. Either way, my hands are good for more than just breaking the cheekbones of racists. Pops taught me fishing, welding, flint knapping, and how to rebuild carburetors. A goddamn pipe dream, me getting a job. I try to remember how them black maple trees smelled, how their leaves felt crushed between my fingers. I miss that, but going outside ain't an option. It's tidy in here and warm, but it ain't from the sun. Been a while since I faced the world, felt the sun on my face. While I lie here on this bed, it's like a lifeboat lost at sea. The dead silence bores into my brain until the air conditioning unit sputters, white noise like sloshing waves. Except lifeboats are for those trying to save themselves, their lives. Am I worth saving? Never prayed to a god before. Even in those lodges as a kid, I never connected to those dead spirits. I pretended to, though, to respect my elders. Could use a sweat right about now. In need of a cleanse, inside and out. Would put up a makeshift lodge. Just need a tarp, smolding rocks, and some water. But nope, I can't do it. I was always on edge. Too many conversations turned into arguments, then into fights. When my eyes saw red, when hot diesel coursed through these veins, nothing could stop me. Her voice stayed muffled, locked up in the Adobe crypt, and one of them ignored parts of my brain. The key was always missing during those nights of savagery. Yeah.
Wow, I thought you were I have the excerpt when I'm reading along, and when you finished what I had for you, I was like, wow, and I was hoping no one heard that because, you know, you weren't done yet. But I always wonder when you're writing a character that's dark, does it ever get, I don't know, oppressive for you as the author, you know, to get into that head?
What do you mean by oppressive?
Well, like heavy. Does it get heavy? Does it get where you yourself, you know, almost feel dark, depressed, disturbed, you know? I mean, you know, even when I just watch something on TV that has a dark sort of character, I carry that over with me. I get done and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be disturbed. Like, you know, we always say it'd be cool to be like in the head of, you know, such and such. So getting into that headspace, does it ever affect you?
Not so much for the characters because there's still that disconnect, I guess. I do like playing around with different voices. But what really gets me is I tend to write, well, right now I'm writing a splatter western for Deathhead Press. And it's a alternative history take on what happened following the Wounded Knee Massacre in South Dakota. And so what really gets to me when I actually have to stop typing and go for a walk or something is mm-hmm. the emotions that come back from previous generations and all of the murder and rape and the real stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it just like flows from my fingertips into my head and back, and it gets too heavy sometimes. And so I have to mm-hmm. really try to find a balance of, you know, real stuff, putting real stuff in there, and mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta, I don't know, you have to step out of the boundaries of reality and to make it not so heart-wrenching, because when it hits too close to home or when it you connect with like history of people that are, you know, related to you, it can really affect you. So as mm-hmm. for characters so far, no, but more likely the content.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think that is a, you know, what makes a good writer is the fact that you can feel it so much. I think that if you didn't have any connect with it, then it would kind of, I think that your readers would be able to tell that. You know, I think I definitely can, you know, when you just, the author feels something very strongly, I think that's easier to convey to them. So yeah, I think we have to feel things a little more strong than most people. So
yeah, definitely.
And I know I was wondering with Anoka, you said that was a town in Minnesota, and I, you know, see that, you know, we talked about you living in California. Is there a reason that you picked this Minnesota town, and is it a real town or is it fiction?
Yeah, so it's a real town. When I was doing research, I wanted to find a place, a real place, because I'm a history major, I'm a historian. I like to mix history with, you know, horror, I guess. That's my knack for now. And so when I was researching creepy places around America, I wanted all my stories to happen in one central area, you know, sort of like Stephen King or Matthew M. Bartlett. And so I happened upon a webpage that described Anoka as the capital, the Halloween capital of the world.
And wow.
Said, what the hell is that? So I checked it out, and it's got real history. It basically stems back to 1920 when they initiated this Halloween parade down the city. And they basically, from the year prior, all the little kids were being real shits. So they tried to figure out, they went to the city hall and they're trying to figure out, all the parents were trying to figure out, what can we do on Halloween night, you know, to have the kids, you know, not be crazy. And so they figured out they'd do like a costume contest and a parade, you know, going down the main street. And so they've been claiming this since 1920. And last year was the 100th year of it being dubbed the, you know, the world's Halloween capital. And the mayor back in 1937 officially dubbed it that. So they claim 1920, but it's really 1937 when they got their official name. But I don't know, I just happened upon it, and I loved everything about it. And it turns out, so my family, my maternal side, is from Hibbing, Minnesota. Hibbing's a small town that's maybe two hours north of Minneapolis, which is the main capital there. And I actually learned after I had written Anoka and talked about it with my mom that she and my grandma actually lived there. And as a kid, my mom was in the actual Halloween parade. And so that was really cool to find out.
Yeah. Do you, you should plan a trip up there. You should definitely go and, you know,
yeah,
write
definitely.
Down your thoughts and take pictures. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was finishing up the editing before I released it. My family actually went up there to Anoka and visited the Anoka Halloween store and bought a whole bunch of merch for me to celebrate, you know, my first book. And then when they got home, they gave me all these cool things.
That's so cool. I do, you know, sometimes I love, you know, I read books before where it's almost like the town you're in, it becomes almost like a character of itself. You know, I mean, it's just, there's something about it. I love to see where I'm at in the whole atmosphere. And, you know, like where I live right now, I have the story kind of like in my head, but, you know. Anyway, it's there's all these old barns, like everywhere in the you know, this town and the neighboring cities and towns and stuff in this little area. And there are all these barns, and they're old, and they look like they, you know, if you blew on them too hard, they would just collapse. And I just wonder, why haven't they been, you know, why haven't they been taken down yet? Why are they still there? And in my head, I'm like, there's some kind of, you know, curse. And if you move one of them or you take one down, you know, the curse will be, you know, lifted. I don't know. So I have all these cool ideas about the area. I love, you know, the whole, like atmosphere or something like that. It's it definitely adds to the story, I think, having a rich you know, feel to your wherever you're placed in your story. So I really, really like that. That's a cool story about Anoka. I want to visit
you.
Now and go to the Halloween store. I mean, who doesn't love Halloween? I mean, I do love Christmas,
right.
But you know, but Halloween is my second favorite. So for most people, yeah. But yeah, oh, that's really cool.
Thank you.
What are you working? What are you working on now?
So I mentioned the Splatter Western. I'm actually pretty busy right now, like, not to brag. I'm
oh, go ahead.
You know, brand new to writing. So Anoka was my first collection. I started writing it mid-July and October 26, 2020. And you know, so I'm an emerging writer. I'm like brand new to the scene. You know, no one knew me before this. And I don't know, I just somehow campaigned my book pretty well on Twitter and such. Grew my following quite a bit organically, and my book got spread like crazy. And I guess my book got to you guys because you guys heard of me somehow. I don't know how, but you found me. And since then, like, everything's been blowing up. Like, I got COVID in December for 3 weeks, like hardcore COVID, not just like a sniffle or a cough. Like I was on oxygen tanks in the ER, and it was a good time. And then so it was like 3 weeks out. So I was really bummed because my book was only out for like a month and a half, and then I had to take a break from like hustling. So I was really antsy. Yeah. So right when I got out of my COVID spell, I tweeted this idea of a dark fiction anthology with all indigenous writers and saying that I would be the editor of it. And for me, you know, I'm relatively a nobody on Twitter, and it garnered like 800 retweets, 800 likes. So for me, that's viral. And I was surprised. There was a lot of demand behind it about the idea. And so I began emailing around, DMing potential writers. And then I got a co-editor who's more experienced. He has a doctorate, and he's actually edited a collection of Stephen Graham Jones's work called The Faster, Redder Road. His name is Theodore C. Van Alst Jr. And so he and I kind of like hustled and got all these people to be on board of this project. And then so we wanted to have maybe 2/3 of the writers in the anthology be established names, and then 1/3 have like 7 spots for open call submissions.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so it's really cool. So we wanted, you know, to help get indigenous dark fiction out there, because, you know, indigenous people make up less than 2% of the entire publishing industry. So we really want more people to, you know, be able to tell their stories. And we thought it'd be really enticing for these 7 potential, you know, emerging writers like myself to have a story in this big book. And,
that sounds awesome. I definitely think when you get closer to pushing the button and getting it wrapped up, you need to get a group together and come on the show. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Awesome.
And yeah, so from late December to right now, we're about to sign a big deal with a big 5 publisher.
Oh, wow. Awesome. So you definitely have to come on the show then. Well, Shane, I thank you so much for agreeing to coming on our show. And this is where I embarrass you and I make you promise you will come back. You will come back, right?
Yeah.
Yay, he promised he can't back out now.
It is legally binding now. You do understand that. So you've done that to yourself.
Thank you so much, Shane, for coming on the show. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Anaka by Shane Hawk. And, and so thank you. Thank you so much. I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you. You guys have a good
Thanks
night.
Thanks a lot. You too. Have a great rest of your evening. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And it is break time, which means a whole new box of Chardonnay for Xtina and a good old wee for me. So we shall be right back in 4 minutes, 45 seconds, according to this.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two.
Well, we're back again. It would seem. It would seem. So, it's funny. As I was saying to Shane there, I don't know if people believe us or not. You know, we're both that busy. We don't talk as much as we used to. But so we have our little 15 minutes before the show. And to be fair, we should broadcast that because what a pair of miserable sods. Literally, we have a good old moan. You know, I've had a miserable week. Oh, what a terrible day!
And then we always feel better. Yeah.
And then the theme tune goes. We get on the show and it cheers up. So it is a sad indictment, certainly of my life, that this is the highlight of my week, and it's just like, is this what I've become? You know, is this why I went to university? Is this why I slogged so hard building a career and then building another one and then building another one and for this to be the climax? And what a great word climax is, isn't it? The climax of my week is this. But you know, I think because we obviously you and I get to have a bit of a chat, a bit of a natter and a bit of a laugh, but we meet such great people. I love that we get to talk to authors from all walks of life, all sorts of genres. I mean, like Shane there, I mean, the indigenous horror and the splatterpunk is something that is very dear to my heart, obviously. You know, and it's just, I think that's what makes it, and that's why we're on episode 236, because my attention span is legendary. You are anybody
I
who's
do.
Known over the years, even down to my, I felt like my dad kept them all. I have school reports from my primary school, literally back to primary school, and they all said, you know, I was very easily distracted, low attention span. It's like, well, to be fair, don't moan about me, you know, don't make this my problem, bitch. You know, you're the teacher. It is literally, your job to engage me as a pupil, not moan that, you know, he's easily distracted, focus on the lesson. Maybe it's because your lesson was shit. You know,
right, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes.
Don't make it the kids' fault. Do not. You know, so they're all dead now. So that's fine.
We have had some amazing guests, though, and I did want to do a quick little shout out to a guest we had a couple of weeks ago, Greg F. Giffune. I got his books in the mail today, yesterday.
Yeah,
I
haven't got mine yet.
I'm sure they're going to be there any second. So, but thank you very much, Greg, and I can't wait to have you come back to the show. And I love when I look back and all the guests that we've had. There was one time I read this book from, and this is awful. I can't believe I'm going to tell this story. I read this book and I'm like, oh my God, we have got to get this chick on the show. And then I looked her up and I went to message her. And I saw like history, and she'd been on the show a couple of years before that. Like it was like I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how do I not remember this show? But yeah, so that's how it's awful. It's awful. But I was so excited that we'd actually had her on, and then I could go back and say, can you please come back because I read you and you're amazing.
You
yeah, it was so cool. Yeah.
It is nice. It's nice that we do get to meet these people. So, certainly, I mean, from Hellbound Books Publishing as well. You know, we communicate with our authors. Usually by email, mostly by email, and it's great when they come on the show and we get to talk to them. And it's I love that. I really do.
Yes,
like that.
And I've been trying to pair up like our authors with their narrators now, and I think that's like,
great idea.
Yes, yes.
But speaking of which, we launched a brand new book this week called Holly and the Nobodies by Ben Pienaar. He's South African living in Australia, but hopefully we'll get him on the show. And it is so wonderfully different, so unique. I mean, it grabbed me within the first few pages. And it's about a lonely young girl who has the ability to conjure up creatures and people and that just from thin air, which is what a great premise. Right. I mean, it's just like, wow. Brilliant
yeah,
book.
Yeah, who would
want
to do that? That's awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. Great book. So hopefully, Yomi, that is available on paperback and Kindle right now, and at some point when you pull your finger out on audiobook.
Yes, I'm definitely going to be on that.
it's
yeah.
on your list.
I can't wait
it's
to.
It's on your list.
Yeah, it is. And I'll have to talk to Ben and see what kind of voice we're looking for. Because I have to say, I love that part of the whole audio as well, when I can talk to the author and ask what they're looking
mm-hmm.
for in the narrator. And, you know, they have a lot of a say in it. And it's just, it makes it so much more personal, so much more fun. And so, yeah, I can't wait
absolutely.
To
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And the audiobooks is such a growing market right now.
Yes.
It's amazing how popular they are. Which I've never listened to one. I mean, I hear some of the snippets from ours, but I've never sat and listened to a whole... I like mm-hmm. to read. For me, it's like
yes.
music. People just sit and listen to music. For me, it's background. You know,
I'll listen
to music while I'm doing something else, not just do that, because
yes.
I just can't. It's probably down
enjoy...
to the attention span thing again, actually.
Yes. I see. I really, really enjoy working on the audiobooks and being on this side of it. It's so much fun. But as for me to sit down and listen to an audiobook for pleasure, I do. I find my mind drifting. I'm thinking about other stuff, and now I have no clue what's happening. So I can't really enjoy it. I really can't, and I hate that, because I've heard some amazing narrators. I have so much fun, you know, managing the audio department. But as far as actually, you know, sitting down for pleasure, which is the total opposite with the boyfriend. He loves audiobooks. He's always listening to an audiobook. I mean, he listens to it to go to bed at night. I hear him up in the, you know, in the morning in the bathroom with the audiobook on. He's in the shower with the audiobook
on.
Oh,
wow, yeah.
I'm like, to me, it is.
To be fair,
background.
He probably has that on so you can't hear him masturbating in the shower, to be honest with you. But, you know, that's...
Whatever works, you know, whatever.
That's my guess. That's my guess.
I put
guess,
music
but,
on, though. You know what I mean? Yeah, not audiobooks, so. But, yeah, I can't
you
do
see,
it,
that's
but
it. That's
he
the beauty
loves it.
Being, that's the beauty of being single now. I can masturbate in the shower whenever I want. If I can do it in the kitchen, if I feel like it. Although
yeah,
the tends to upset the doggies, I have to say. Although it's funny now. It's funny now though. But so when the kids are out and it's just me and whatever, you know, I'd sometimes, you know, I'd strip off. Instead of being in the garden, whatever, you know,
yeah.
I'd just strip off everything in the laundry and everything. Now since mm-hmm. we got the new dog, who is a girl dog, I don't do that. I will leave my underwear on because Omega's about. I don't get to see my tail. You know, it's like, and it's just funny, just with the being with the guy dogs, it's fine, not a problem. We're all boys together, you know, not a problem. But with her, it's an odd. It's funny how the dynamic sort of shifted a little bit. But
I never
yeah,
thought about that. Yeah.
I'm a little bit self conscious in front of the dog, which is kind of weird.
It is, but it's oddly charming. So there's
it's a very British thing, isn't it? British thing. You can't
so,
let
yeah.
you can't let the lady dog see your parts, see your meat and two veg, James. No. Anyhow, let's leave my meat and two veg out of the show. I think it's probably time to bring on our second guest. I warrant.
It is. I hope he's still there after all of that. But, yeah.
I was going to say, he's probably thinking, I don't want to be associated with people, the guy on the show in which he exposes himself to the dog. I mean, there's just a horrible wrongness about the whole thing, you know?
Speaking of wrongness, here we go. Our second guest of the night is splatterpunk author Daniel Volpe.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel. You're you are still there. Thank goodness for that.
Yes, that was a very interesting conversation. I was happy to be a fly on the wall.
Yes, you know, when we do the 15 minutes prior to the show, there's sometimes I'm like, God, I'm so glad nobody can hear this right now. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you listen to the stuff that actually does go out on the air, and then, yeah, the other is just, I actually said, you know, we should record, we should actually do that, do the first 15 minutes, maybe do a compilation show of the best of the first 15 minutes. And see how arrested we get.
Yeah. I would tune in to listen to that. But so where are you calling from, Daniel?
I'm in New York.
New York.
Okay. So is that what the city or the state?
No, I'm in the state. I'm about 100 miles outside of New York City.
All right, cool. You're in the nice part.
I grew up in upstate New York. Whereabouts are you?
Like the Hudson Valley? The Hudson Valley area?
Mm. I was Newark area. That's where I lived was Newark. That's where I grew up. But, yeah, tiny little town by, like, Syracuse and Rochester and all that stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, you were up there a little bit.
Yeah, I was. I'm so glad I'm not there anymore. No, I love where I live, so that's, you know, I don't mean to like sound bad about any other states, but you know, I do love where I live, and I think that's important. I do. So, and I don't you know, I think that it used to get a lot colder, or it stayed a lot more. Like I remember when I was a kid in New York and it would snow you know, like I don't know, like October, November-ish, and then it would stay frozen until the thaw in the spring. And, like, I don't think it quite does that anymore, not like it used to anyway. And I do not miss the snow like that at all. We get a little bit here, but nothing at all like you New Yorkers. And you can have that because even though I don't like the heat, I don't like it when it's, like, too cold either. I like to watch the snow from the, you know, the window.
To be fair, you're just never bloody happy, are you? Be honest.
Yeah, you know what? We snowed here Christmas Day last year. How amazing is that? I mean, how often does that happen? So that was really cool. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, it can go away any other time, but Christmas Day was pretty cool. So
yeah, that's awesome.
So is it like super hot there now? See, that's what I remember about New York is that you got super hot in the summer, but super cold in the winter. Like there was no really in between. I don't remember.
Yeah, we get all four seasons. So this winter is really pretty brutal. We got a lot of snow, some very very cold days, and now we've just had the last handful of days have been in the mid 90s. So it's definitely warm.
Yeah. Oh God, 90s. I think I saw that in the car once where it registered that it was 90, but didn't actually say that it was going to be that hot, like, you know, the news person. So, but I was mad. I was like, oh God, 90, no, kill me now. And yeah, it's just, I think it makes me, you know, feel like I'm going to be hotter than I actually am when it, so it's better just, I don't see it. Just don't let me see the news and don't let me know what temperature is going to be and I'll probably be better off. But,
exactly.
Yeah. So, Daniel, you're here to talk to us about your book, Talia. Did I say that right? Because I butchered the last guy's book.
Yeah, that's my my newest book that's out right now is Talia. I have a newer one coming out at the end of this month, but it's not out yet, so I don't want to give too much away about it. But that will be coming out from D&T Publishing at the end of the month.
And tagline, In Flames, She Was Born. I have seen the cover of this book, like, everywhere. I think that's pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about it.
So the character of Talia is actually a supporting character from my first novella that I wrote, Billy Silver. In Billy Silver, she's actually a tattoo artist, and you learn some things about her. And she's got a few interesting quirks in that book. And after I had finished it, a bunch of people were asking me, like, you know, I really want to know more about her. I want to know more. You should write something about her. And I never really had any interest in doing that. And then one day I was like, you know what, I kind of do want to know more about her. So Talia is a semi-prequel to Billy Silver in the essence that it covers Talia's backstory. Both books are complete standalone. So Talia is set in the early 1990s in New York City, and it's about a young woman named Talia who lives in the Midwest, who ventures out to the Big Apple to try and become a star on Broadway. She ends up falling in with some shady characters who are doing some adult films, and they rope her into this and kind of get her indebted to them. And bad things happen to her and others along the way.
Now, it says splatterpunk, and I have to admit I am not too sure what splatterpunk is. So, yeah, tell me what it is.
So there's a couple of people. Some people define splatterpunk and extreme horror in two different ways. So to me, splatterpunk is kind of a version of extreme horror that deals with some kind of issue in society. It's not just the extreme to be extreme. So like in Billy Silver deals with drug addiction. It deals with abusive relationships. Which is self-destructive behavior and stuff like that. And in Talia, it's similar. It's dealing with same thing, abuse, illicit pornography, necrophilia. It goes into stuff like that.
Wow.
So it's more of that extreme line, but it's also covering some major issues with society. It's kind of how I define it. But it's very extreme and very graphic.
Now, you know, talking to you, you sound like a very down-to-earth, nice guy. What draws you to write the splatterpunk and extreme horror? What draws you to that?
I've always been a horror fan ever since I was a kid. And as I got older, you know, I kind of branched away. You know, I did the whole, like, Goosebumps to Stephen King, you know, Scary Stories. And, you know, that was kind of my staples. And as I got a little bit older, I started discovering extreme horror, mainly with like Edward Lee and Richard Layman and Jack Ketchum. And I like the realism in it. And some of it, yeah, some of it is very fantastical and it's ridiculous and out there, but some of it is very real. And I like the realism in the extreme horror, the descriptiveness of it. You know, people don't, in real life, people don't die nice, generally speaking. They usually die, it's graphic, they're crying, it can be, even if they do die in their sleep, there's always some kind of bodily fluids or rigor mortis, you know, on their face or lividity. And I kind of just wanted to expose that, to let the lay person kind of see those the underbelly of society, we'll say.
No, I like that.
You know,
I like that. I mean, it's funny, my all-time hero author, James Herbert, the British author, he's lauded as being the father of splatterpunk. And I remember his book, The Rats, was one of the first, well, in fact, the first grown-up horror book I ever read. And, yeah, it was so real, you know, the death, I mean, before that, obviously, you know, you see your death on the cowboy films, they get shot and da-da-da-da, but, and again, it was the first time, you know, you realize that, yeah, that, you know, the bladder and the bowels do let go when you die, and, you know, it's not all, you know, wonderful last words and a swooning passing away and that, and it is nasty and it's gritty and it's vile, and he's certainly in his early works, he's one of the certainly the first really to delve into that, which got me hooked. I think that's probably what got me hooked on horror, just getting away from the almost the romanticized bit about death, you know. It was which I like, and like you say, I mean, like with you, you know, Edward Lee, Ketchum, you know, all those people, absolutely brilliant stuff. It's so visceral. It's you know, sometimes you need a very strong stomach to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't know about you, but I want to hear a little bit more about Talia. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
I do. This is So this is towards the end. I write a lot of very short novella-length books. So like Billy Silver is only 26,000. Talia is only 40,000 words because I hate fluff. Like, I don't mind reading long books and stuff like that, but I hate the fluff. So a lot of my chapters really give away a lot. So I'm going to read a part which doesn't give away too much. The characters that I talk about aren't main characters, but you will see a little bit of my writing style and just some of the graphic nature that and some of the violence that I have in here.
Can't wait.
All right.
Ready?
You guys
when you
ready
are.
For it?
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Nico drove the van with a cigarette stuck between his fingers. Luke sat shotgun, his own cigarette burning, giving its smoke to the open window. Tommy sat on an old milk crate in the back of the van. He hated smoking. The three amigos, the body boys, the cleanup crew, whatever they were called, the job was the same. Whatever the boss said, that was it, plain and simple. If the boss said, go kill that guy, they killed him. If he said, rape this girl and get rid of her body, they did it. Obedience and loyalty, that was the way to get ahead in their organization. Over the years, since the three of them were teenagers, they'd done it all. Arson, murder, kidnapping, rape, extortion, assault, you name it, they did it. This night was no different. Mike was filming another sick fucking movie where the main attraction wasn't expected to get out alive. That was where they came in. Sally had called them the night before, letting them know they were on for Saturday. All three were happy to have the work. Since the night they raped that light-skinned chick, they really hadn't done much. They didn't even get to dispose of her body properly, having left that to Sally. Nico sped down the street. They were going to be early, but that was okay. In their line of work, it was better to be early than late. You think we're going to get the fuck again? Tommy asked, leaning forward, his arms against the two front seats. Luke rolled his window and tossed his cigarette butt in the street. Not sure, so I hope you didn't whack it today. He smiled at his buddy sitting behind him. Tommy laughed. I did, but trust me. He grabbed his crotch. The old Brajol was up for another round. He thought back to the things he'd done to the last girl. Besides, something living is always better than your hand. Nico stubbed his cigarette out in the ashtray, a tendril of smoke still rising. Don't tell that to Sally, he said, the man's name feeling gross on his lips. Don't even mention him, Tommy said. Neither of the three of them liked Sally, but they respected him. Well, maybe respect wasn't the right word. No, they feared him, and rightfully so. Sally was a butcher, a monster with no conscience who'd kill for fun. The rumors about his lust for dead girls started out funny, then rumors came in from every angle and couldn't be ignored. When they saw him drag the corpse inside the suitcase into the Connex box, they knew for sure. Yeah, he gives me the creeps, and I've done bad fucking shit, Luke said. Well, he's probably going to be there tonight, so get him out of your fucking brains, Nico said, looking at his passengers. He never saw the dog. Oh, shit, Tommy said, pointing towards the windshield. Nico looked up and saw the black dog standing in the middle of the road. It didn't flinch as the massive work van barreling toward it. He slammed the brakes, locking them up, and cut the wheel. The dog looked at the out-of-control vehicle, its eyes flashing red, just before it ran to the dark alley. The van went into an uncontrollable slide as Nico fought to maintain traction. Tommy bounced around the back, not being fastened in. His head bounced off the metal walls, slicing his scalp. The tires bit hard, digging the rims into the asphalt. The van found purchase in the roadway, starting it rolling. Fuck, Nico yelled, bracing against the steering wheel. He could feel the van starting to tip, the center of gravity shifting. There was nothing he could do. He was just along for the ride. As the van flipped, the impact shattered glass and popped open the rear doors. Tommy felt weightless, like he was an astronaut in zero gravity. Except he wasn't in space. He was flying through the air in the back of a van. He grasped for anything he could as he flew toward the open rear doors. Smooth metal mocked him, not giving anything to grip onto. He flew from the van, seeing it tumble away moments before striking a telephone pole. His chest took the impact first, folding his body in half. The force of the collision snapped his kneecaps, breaking his legs so hard he kicked himself in the face. His mangled corpse came to rest on the curb, twisted and broken. The van rolled again, glass and bones breaking alike. Finally, it came to a rest on the driver's side door. Nico was in pain, but that meant he was alive. It wasn't bad at first, the shock and adrenaline dulling it, but then it hit him. The dashboard had collapsed on his legs, snapping them both in the middle of his femurs. Waves of nauseating pain rolled over him like the ocean, each rising in intensity. His face was a bloody mess from the broken glass, but it all seemed to miss his eyes. Something dripped on him. A pain in his legs made him want to ignore it, but human curiosity got the better of him. Luke hung from his seatbelt, dead. During one of the many rolls, his head had poked out of the window, just enough for it to catch the ground. The force partially decapitated him, ripping his neck open to make him look like a macabre Pez dispenser. The skin on his face was pulled back, making his eyes bulge and bleed. His neck rested at such an angle, Nico could see into his mangled throat. Nico listened, hoping for the first time in his life the cops would show up. Anyone that could help. The dead van groaned, glass tinkled, still falling from shattered frames. The engine hissed and ticked, fluids dripping like the blood from Luke's neck. Sounds of the city seemed miles away as Nico lay in agony. Then he heard a sound. Footsteps, crushing bits of glass, walking towards the van. Help, he croaked. Even taking breaths hurt his injured body. He looked through the missing windshield, watching a shadow grow smaller as someone approached. Call an ambulance, Nico moaned. A pair of legs walked into his view. A woman's legs. Oh my God, she said, crouching down to look through the crumpled opening where the windshield used to be. Are you okay? She asked, looking at his bloody face and the mangled corpse of his passenger. Nico looked at the black-haired woman with disgust. Does it fucking look like I'm okay? She said, taking the cards in front of her. It does not. Her eyes tracked back to his face. Instead of brown or green, they were red. That is it.
Wow. You can't stop that.
That was,
right.
I was there.
To, but,
I was in that van. That was brilliant. Very, and beautifully read as well.
Thank you.
I can't stop thinking of the, yeah, real. You described it as you know, Splatterpunk is real, and I that's how I would describe it as well too. Just gritty and just even the dialogue of what they were talking about and stuff. You're just like, wow, yeah, that's good. It's one of those things that's almost like, you know, if you saw it, like if you're a fly and you saw these things happening. You wouldn't want to look, but you would not be able to look away. You'd have to, you know, yeah. So, no, that was great.
Thank you. No, I feel the same way, and that's why there's always, you know, when there's an accident on the highway, there's always rubbernecking for miles, and people want to look. And, you know, I think a lot with horror, and especially extreme horror, is it kind of invokes that emotion of, this is so horrible, and I'm so glad it's not me and it's someone else.
Yeah. Only thing I can, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I'm a huge fan of like the Rob Zombie Halloween reboots, and you know, there were certain scenes in the movie, the first one, where I just was like, I'm not going to walk away the same after I see this. You know, I'm like, I shouldn't be seeing this, and that's kind of how I feel about, you know, your reading. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Right. Well, it's definitely something that I think that, you know, it stays with you and it paints such a vivid picture. And, you know, we've said before on the show that the horror authors, when we talk to the horror authors and have them on, you know, whatever they're writing, if it's gruesome, if it, you know, whatever it is, they are like the nicest people. And we think this is the reason, because they write these things and they take out their anger and they're, you know, so they're not doing these things in real life. They write it down and we're safe from you guys. Is that that's our working theory anyway, you know, that's what keeps you all sane is the stuff that you write.
Yeah, since I've kind of gotten onto the scene last year, the extreme horror and horror community is just, it's amazing, very welcoming, and everybody's pretty nice.
It's,
I mean, you
so
get
nice.
A couple people
yeah.
who kind of are out there, but for the most part, I mean, everybody's been pretty welcoming. So I do. I think we got a nice little group of people, a decent mix, and like you said, that, you know, we get to put this on paper, so we don't have to do it in real life, I guess.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Well, I hate that we're running out of time here on the show, but first off, you have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, absolutely.
Yay! And now tell us where we can find you online.
So I'm on. I actually just made a Twitter account today because I detest Twitter, but I know it's kind of. I kind of have to do it. So that is what the hell did I put it under? I think it's DJ Volpe Horror. Mm-hmm. Instagram is the same thing, DJ Volpe Horror, which I just changed that around because I had it as something different. But DJ Volpe Horror on there, and Facebook is Daniel Volpe, or I have like a page that's Daniel J Volpe, but you can find me pretty much on there. All my books are on Amazon, and they're all in digital form on godless.com as well.
Awesome, awesome. For all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Talia by Daniel Volpe. And I'm thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we had such a great time with you, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I have a new book coming out at the end of the month, so whenever you want me. I have two more books coming out this year, so I am I'm always ready.
Brilliant.
All righty, I'll be talking to you.
And we will, Xtina will stalk you, so I shall look forward to chatting again.
Thank you,
Sounds
Daniel.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank
Bye.
You. Have a great night. Okay, bye-bye.
You too.
Well, time has beaten as it does. I don't know. I really don't know. It just sort of whizzes by. I suppose if it dragged on, it means we weren't having a good time. But we do, and I like that. So, unfortunately, it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
One can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone. Real is the feeling of make-believe. Too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender. Like a crown, pretend that you're still around. Pretend that you're